So our next speaker is Mildred Williamson, PhD, MSW. She is a public health social worker and social justice activist. Great combination. She served as HIV/AIDS section chief for the Illinois Department of Public Health from 2008 to 2015, and previously served as the director of program planning and research for the ambulatory clinics of the Cook County Bureau of Health Services. In 1998, she helped to launch Project Brotherhood, a black men's clinic, while serving as administrator for Woodlawn Health Center in Chicago. She began her career in public health delivery in 1989 as the first administrator of the Women and Children HIV program at Cook County Hospital, which is now one of the Ruth M. Rothstein Core Center programs. Mildred completed requirements for her doctorate in social work in 2000 at the School of Social Service Administration at the University of Chicago. She is a longstanding member of the Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. Please welcome Mildred.
It's a great honor to have been asked to participate in this event today, and I'm really happy to be here. A black woman dares to insist upon respectful treatment from a police officer in southern Texas, and then mysteriously dies while in police custody after being arrested and beaten on camera for failing to signal a lane change. A mere traffic violation that should have never resulted in anything other than a warning, not even a ticket. Rest in peace, Sandra Bland, and remember the names, Rakia Boyd, Betty Jones, and countless others. The struggle continues. A black woman, Bree Newsom, dares to climb a pole bearing the Confederate flag and takes it down with the help of her white social justice brother in arms, James Tyson, while the South Carolina state legislature argues about honoring Southern heritage as if we don't know that those are code words for basically honoring brutal racism and the power and control it continues to support. Thank you, Bree and James. This act of courage is significant. Even powerful in light of the murder of 9 black parishioners, which was the egregious incident that prompted the redemand to remove the flag from the state capitol grounds. Though our grievances go far beyond the display of a racist symbol of gross inhumanity, it still counts, and the struggle must continue. Thank you, Black Lives Matter, Black Youth Project 100, Asada's Daughters, Grassroots Collaborative, Dream Defenders, and the many women who play leadership roles in these organizations and many more, for your amazing and inspiring mass organizing efforts, and to the families of Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, Laquan McDonald, Ronald Johnson, Quintonio LeGreer, Freddie Gray, and so many others. Each name propels the demand that the struggle must continue. 57% of Flint, Michigan's population is African American, and 42% of the city of 99,000 is poor, representing a 50% loss in population size since its peak in 200,000 in 1960, due to the abandonment, even retaliation, of the auto industry after numerous militant and heroic union organizing activities and strikes over the 20th century by the workers and residents there. Fast forward to the 21st century, and the city is besieged by destruction of its social safety net, slashing of democracy by right-wing and corrupt political leaders, followed by outright poisoning of the water, the most fundamental of all human rights betrayed. Who leads the effort to call this injustice to the world's attention? There are many, but in the main, they are women, and some of them are. Leanne Walters, who sounded the alarm to all who would listen when she discovered her whole family was losing their hair from merely taking a bath in the water. Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, a pediatrician and epidemiologist, sounded the alarm when a review of her own baseline lead level data on her young patients was compared with their lead levels after the Flint water source was changed, which proved the water was toxic after the governor and other political officials declared the water to be safe. Karen Weaver, a clinical psychologist and recently elected mayor of Flint, who immediately declared a state of emergency in this city after inauguration. Her beginning term is the first for an actual elected mayor with full control of operations since a series of unelected emergency managers appointed by the governor previously managed those operations, including the decision to change the source of the water supply for the city of Flint in order to save money. Three women, all Americans, white, black, Iraqi Americans, among countless parents, residents, and other activists, were relentless in pushing this preventable disaster into the global spotlight where it remains today. Indeed, the struggle must continue. Last week, PBS, public television, showed a documentary basically about the AIDS epidemic, not across the world, but in South Carolina. We learned about the apartheid conditions under which the Affordable Care Act is administered and the consequences on people's lives, just like the poison water in Flint, Michigan. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that states do not have to expand Medicaid unless they choose to do so. Most southern states have refused to expand Medicaid, which incidentally are the same states with the highest percentages of African American populations, poverty populations, and the worst health indicators for a variety of conditions, including HIV/AIDS. What does this mean in terms of life for people who live in these states? People die. Like the daughter of Wilhelmina, living with HIV and substance addiction in rural South Carolina, who after an accidental fall was forced into a nursing home where she died because a policy decision was made to stop administering her HIV medication due to what? It cost too much. Why did the nursing home have no consequences to pay for their action? The state refused to pay to expand Medicaid or pay their appropriate state share of the Ryan White AIDS Drug Assistance Program costs, which makes the drugs available all over this country for people living with HIV, even those without health insurance or just unable to pay. The governor, Nikki Haley, even refused to support HIV prevention billboards because of perceived negative messages to attracting businesses to locate in South Carolina. Existing signs on HIV prevention were removed based on this concern about business location decision. The struggle must continue with the infusion of making connections, mutual relevance, and intersectionality of multiple injustices and attacks on the global working class with multiple demands for social progress, and here are some examples. The fight for $15 an hour minimum wage, workplace safety, easily accessible, high-quality childcare is a fight for women. The fight for community control of public education is a fight for the rights and equality of women. The fight for universal, high-quality healthcare access, including reproductive justice, is a fight for the rights and equality of women. The fight against racism and exploitation is a simultaneous fight for the rights and equality of women of every nationality across this globe. The fight for community control of police is a fight for the rights and equality of women. In this month of celebrating women's contribution to history and social progress across the globe, we can cite many historic and current outstanding contributions by women whose names are widely known and many more whose names and act of courage are not well known at all. This struggle continues, and it must do so by simultaneously making these intersectionality connections. Thank you again for allowing me to speak.